Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is episode 3 of the problem of induction. And basically, induction is actually having a stab at what's going to... could be the solution, predicting the future with obviously the past. So if you're purely working within the past, you can get more sophisticated view of the past or deduce more of what happened in the past by using deduction. So A is a member of such and such, and B is a member of C as well. So you can make conclusions about the relationship between A and B. It's not probabilistic. But then if you go to induction, it says that I make a conjecture, a hypothesis, and I then look for examples which support that hypothesis. It's a very expansive idea introduced by Sir Francis Bacon, the actual idea of induction, as a method of expansion of reasoning. And so it's the basis of science. And Hume came along very early on in the piece, before a whole lot of regimes of science came out, and said induction cannot be logically based. And he had two ways of doing it. I'll have to remember it, but basically it was demonstrative and some other form. That's basically math. You know, can you have mathematical induction? And he said no, because mathematics, essentially, as far as I can read it, is that A equals B is really just sort of papering over an object with a new layer of paint. So it's got 180 degrees. It's a triangle. It's not really saying anything in that area of logic, and that really improves. Bids me to go back and remember the two types of induction: the demonstrative induction, and then I suppose factual induction. And he said factual induction really can't exist anyway, because it's rooted in experience. It's just a statement of fact to go across. And you had this rather problem that the actual, or would appear, based on the problem that science, the most rational of all human activities, is, you know, just a product of pure rationality. It's actually a main engine of innovation, which is induction, doesn't exist. So so induction is just predicting the future from the past. I expect this to be, and looking at the strength of your prediction. A prediction is only a probability if it's in the future. And when you look at it, people use induction. They get a report on someone or such and such, and given the evidence, they make a projection forward what is likely to happen. So induction is actually used by scientists in the conduction of making scientific quality observations to feed into the economy. So they can use that. But induction is also used by scientists in the creation of more knowledge. So you can use induction to make a prediction. So induction basically makes a prediction. And there's a whole series of things about how you go across it. The Hume, so you have this fundamental problem. So Hume was basically looking at the idea of, can you actually have a miracle? So he was skeptical. You know, skeptical. If you can't have a miracle, you then have all the, and you can't. You can't. There's actually no need for God with induction. So he was at this point in science where science was about to begin, you know, fully to take off. The Age of Enlightenment was about to really get underway, and he's sort of looking back at the overall structure of things, and this set the cat among the pigeons. So it wasn't Newton per se which upset Kant, upset the European rationalists, but it was the Hume starting to make theological generalizations from the implications of Newton. So he left it as an open question, which Kant and various other people answered. So they very much pursued down rational methodologies, which led to a whole series of scientific advances, namely magnetism and I suppose the discipline of rationalism, which Einstein pursued. So that was one aspect of it, and again, I'll have to really reread this, so I'm rereading it out. And I'm about to launch into Bayesian ideas. So it is said that Bayes, upon reading Hume's work, it's less likely, but Bayes, Thomas Bayes, around the early 1700s, read the report and came up with some basic ideas to do with probabilistic theory for induction. And really, I am struggling to see, or I can see that, I think, the way that I have it is that the formulation of Bayesian theorems, so people who will study this will say, oh, this is great, this is quintessential sort of logic, and Bayesian theorem is very important for medical ethics and what can you say, essentially a group of people with different qualities of induction, different theories of induction will reach different points. So it's really getting rather in ground. So in general, the idea is that medical professionals who are aware of Bayes' theorem, Bayes' theories, will be able to better advise and better do tests. So Bayesian's theory sort of expands, sort of gone sort of generations ahead in the idea that the information you get will influence the decisions that one might take, and they're not for free. So if you do a test, it may guide you to do more tests, and you will discover something which you could have discovered a different route or undergone a different therapy, in terms of it's just not a sheet of exercise paper you're dealing with. You're dealing with human lives. You can't run parallel versions of it. So the various tests gives you information. So sort of induction is basically for a hypothesis. You seek evidence for the hypothesis to build the hypothesis, and the hypothesis then eventually migrates down into an established hypothesis, which is later used in deduction. So a deductive theory. So I make it a great deduction. So Sherlock Holmes made did deductions and inductions. He did Sherlock Holmes at Baker Street, did various experiments up there while sniffing cocaine, looked down the microscopes and tested whether the deductive theories that he was going to use would work. But then he would see dirt on someone's shoes, or the way that someone looked, or behaviour things. He would observe, cleanly observe, and from that observation go from the general to specific in various ways. So deductions going from general to specific. Induction's the opposite. You go from specifics of the evidence to make a generalization. And of course, an established generality goes down, And so that's a straw root going up. You can have a sort of a false generalization. Now, associated with the theory here is the uniformity principle, the up theory. I'll get onto Bayes in a short while. The up theory, the uniformity theory that I make an induction, and this is what Bayes's Hume's problem was, that the process of induction assumes the uniformity theory, that nature will be uniform. So if I observe something melting in my ice cube, melting in my beaker, that corresponds to the same system as an ice cube melting in Antarctica, you know, off the coast, so it's of Antarctica. And the same processes occur in there because nature is uniform, and that is an accepted thing. And unbeknown to, I suppose, Hume at the time, his nature is probably extended, possibly the Earth, and sort of comprehensible the difference, you know, a few hundred light years of stars away. And of course, we've now, the universe expanded, and we specifically do observations to the edge of the universe to check the uniformity principle. So it's embedded in a slightly different way. But ultimately, people, induction is really relies on the uniformity period principle, and when you unwind it, it just actually, it's something based on the uniformity principle which confirms the uniformity principle. Now, what actually happens in science is that when this doesn't happen, what is considered uniform changes, or our nature of uniform. But this is in the time before this. So this is the early Enlightenment. And for me, the interesting thing here is that this style of thinking is the exact style of thinking you need to debunk or navigate your way through non-scientific treatise, which this is people who believe things due to the uniformity principle, but extended beyond natural science. So I would hazard sort of kinetic theory of gases and the periodic table and stuff like that as uniformity for here, whereas people extend that uniformity principle to their own belief system. I've never been wrong. My friends are always right. My group. So it's sort of a social thing. And and Hume correctly points out that it's a sentiment. Ultimately, the uniform principle in those hands is a sentiment. And so for me, the actual sort of dividing line through this is, yes, you've got this debate, but another layer is what is the nature of your sentiment, or what is the nature, how do you approach this, you know, which is all important. Do you make assumptions like this, or does the assumptions limit the amount of toolage or the amount of time you spend across here? And we go into the Bayes theorem, and what there's a sort of two important things. There's the symbol PR brackets something means the probability of something. So the probability of rain in Melbourne, in Sydney, is 10%. Then if you put constraints on that or further information, that probability changes. So the probability of change in Sydney / autumn is This is going back historically. Autumn is 20%. Now, PR Sydney is 10%. PR Autumn, but all the cases that you put in there, weighted by the amount of the cases there, the probability of that case, will give you the PR. So the probabilities do stack up, but another way of looking at this is that PR hypothesis information or hypothesis evidence, the value that you get out there is a complex thing. There's obviously a it's a living historical thing. So when you first arrive in here, it'll be 10%, but as you gather more data, so it's the probability is a statement of how likely it's to happen, but it also tells you about the information. So that's the and therefore, if you say, and how you approach it is your cultural approach. So if you have various probabilities that you're considering, and you have a methodology which removes low probabilities, those low probabilities may be for that, given that information. But if you have more information, those low probabilities are very high. So you may remove, say, I'm not going to consider it raining in summer whatsoever. However, if you have information that there is a rainstorm coming, that you may say, well, it's zero, because you can actually go through a process of it. And so this is very much in reading these reports where people have said, look, the probability of this happening as a population is very low, yet the person I'm looking at, this is very high. Probably, you know, this would be very high given this other information. But what I've done is I've eliminated this possibility for the clarity of communication. And it appears very clear and it appears very justified, but if you remove the information from it, it makes it very complex to go ahead. So there's sort of like two aspects. I'm not going to get very deep into the Bayes' theorem, but there's two aspects to Bayes', there's three aspects to it. There's the idea of you have two groups of researchers, okay. One is school and Bayes' theorem, and they will, as a tendency, not to throw away as many probabilities and gather more information and actually build the Bayesian matrix. This is the system, Bayesian system. You can draw a two-dimensional system of it. And they'll tend to do it. And they may find other situations, or they may find a strategy to do with the information. Or you have another group where they're sort of like further back on the uniformity principle, and it's rather than taking it as a uniformity principle, they're taking it as a law. And so with that, they throw away probabilities, options, they get swept away, and those options never appear. So it's like if you've thrown away a remote possibility, that remote possibility will have no way of going if you've thrown it away very, very early, if you're in a group of people. And what will happen, I think, that if people don't use Bayesian theories, they'll become ever more reliant on a tightening, ever-tightening circle of more and more despotic leadership type of people. So we need leadership, moral leadership, ethical leadership, but some of the time people are saying, look, we need leadership in really basic things which could be handed over to scientists, and you know, like climate policy or things like that, or process. And the scientists are looking at probability, and this probability goes forward. So there's that. And then there's another tier flavour in that our understanding of probability is going to change with time. And so we almost have to get into the Bayesian theory so that when the probabilities improve, our predictive probabilities improve, our way to induce induction is future. I think it's future-looking generalization. A generalization is to all cases in all time. So, you know, looks in the future with the past is a very specific case. Is one instance. So it's more generalized. So an instance in this is where we're looking at our ability to predict weather or to predict phenomena with ever advancing supercomputers and models. And systems of models that we can go forward. So what that means is that our prediction forward, that our group of strong rhetorical leaders, we're saying you have it now, but in future your arguments won't go. Imagine that rather than saving for a rainy day, we know exactly when those rainy days are going to be. So your basis is correct for now, but it's for later. And so that's a really complex thing. So in Bayesian theory, there's the idea of a probability of the basic PR slash the PR of I suppose hypothesis given evidence. That's the most inductive area, and it's one of these things preempted computer, you know, said computers are going to have to come into this, and it's sort of like a plurality. Like if it's a game of chance, it's a game, and so a lot more people can get involved in it and invest in it. To go through. So it's your PR A slant B. What's the probability of A given B? The other aspect is the probability of not A given B and the probability of A given not B. There's a system of knots, and of course one can see that this, if you apply the full system of knots system, you will obviously get one. You know, the probability of A given B, the probability of A given not B, the probability of not A given B, the probability of not A given not B. You know, they must add up to one, because if you've got, it's like your little matrix there, it has to add up to one. Something's got to happen. The evidence is either happens or it doesn't. The evidence is there or it's not, to go across. But you then get these things which are sort of counterintuitive, and I've seen some not counterintuitive, but hard to reason if you haven't had statistics, which is all the more that, you know, really should hand a lot of this management of the planet over to us scientists. And the thing I want to do is the Bayes theorem is very important for scientists, but it's also important for medical practitioners, people who are future looking. So a doctor comes in and they're seeing you now because you and the doctor have an imagined tomorrow where you're better or things are a lot worse. You haven't lost as much money, but you're feeling better. So you're actually paying to modify your future. So the Bayes process comes across here. And one of the things they do is they talk about false positives. That is, that a test, an evidence, is not complete evidence of something. So in deduction, in deductive systems, it's pretty well that if I see you, I can misinterpret the evidence, but that properly interpreted evidence, evidence can be described as evidence of the hypothesis, whereas of that cause, where the evidence may suggest multiple causes, it's a game of chance. And the process is, if you say that the example given often is the you have a population where 1% of the people will die of cancer, and the way that I would read it is that if you have got rid of, if you've worked through the process and you're down, you've eliminated the 20% deaths and the 10% deaths and the 5% deaths, it becomes worthwhile to, and if you've got excess value, it's worthwhile to invest in screening and doing things for that 1%. But only there. It's not worthwhile doing it if you're going to poor results in there and half the people are going to die anyway of starvation, or half the people are going to die of exposure. So this really goes into it. And you have a test which is 80% accurate. And I think the best way I know is to consider 1,000 people. So 1% of 100 people is one person. 10%, 1% of 1,000 people is 10 people. So if you imagine people as white balls and the black ones are people with cancer, you take out 1,000 balls, you take out 10, and you 10 white ones, and you add in 10 black ones, so it's 990 white ones and 10 black ones, and it's going in, and you have a test to see whether it's black or white, it's got cancer or not, and that test is 80% accurate. So out of those 10 people, say you were to test everyone, out of those 10 people, 8 would be correctly identified, and 2 would be put back into the white pile. And then out of the 990 people, the other people, a full 20% of that is there. So for every 100, you get 2, so that's 180 balls get put in. So you've got these 8 white, these 8 black people put in the, have got cancer, this test has got cancer. And you've got 100, 20 people for every 180. 194. So you'll have 8 plus 194. Is there anything I can get you, darling? Your thing? Yes, you can. Yeah. What do you want to use in the study? What are they? You can use them all. Absolutely. Yeah. Sorry about that. The number of, you've got this test, and this test will pull out of your population. What is it? 198. Is that right? 48. Yeah, 198 plus 8 people. And so what we'll do is it will create a smaller pool of 8 in 100 and 206 people. That's the way it goes. Now, writing the basic maths is a lot easier for it. And so that your test, your scientific test, is scientifically valid, and you can prove it. So a lot of tests are now getting statistical, and your question is that if the doing that process modifies, so the tests, unfortunately with humans, tests are not that effect. If you were to suddenly tell that number of people, you might induce two other people to have cancer throughout both tests that the testing may cause it. And so the effectiveness of that test in terms of screening cancer gets you so far, so much cost, but requires you to do another test, a test across. And so overall, although you're seeing, if you look at the very fine detail of the people with cancer who are cured and the two people who've missed, and the two people who didn't have cancer before but now have cancer because of it, and say you can't cure these people, you have to be very stringent and actually go through this and actually and see it. So in terms of medical science, the Bayesian theory is very important, and this is all about the actual conduct of induction. For me, it's very interesting in terms of the fact that the people seeing a problem with induction predicting the future then led all these other people, Kant and others, to say... So these people were having a fairly sanguine look at a naive view of induction. Now, people to see the future, and that sort of has led to two streams. One is the statistical technique of actually attributing it, and the, you know, when you say something, you're saying something about the test, the information, and being able to actually properly account for the probabilities. Now, I could explain that. So it's really complex in the medical field when you're looking at what one should do and how you can communicate that to people, especially, say, people who've got an experimental cure. Say if they go on that drug, and it's their last chance, but if they're not controlled, it means that they're using that drug and not generating information. And at a certain point, the thing that cures people is information. So you might be taking a chance with the drug. If you have a whole series of people asking for drugs, and you might cure one or two people, you don't know if there's a placebo effect. There's all these complex things, and you may be doing it in such a way that you're not generating useful information to decide whether you need to use it or not, or reduce the overall harm to get out there. Now, there's a whole series of Bayesian processes, equations, which I will have to eventually have to get through. So I've had a bit of a brain wipeout recently, and so looking at that, I can sort of can remember things. I can sort of initially I don't see it, and then it sort of comes back to memory. There's all these, the polynomial theory for just basic probability, go through it. The thing is that you've got these fundamental things that are actually quite easy to write down. So there's that one there, understanding the test and the cost of tests. There's also the methodology of when one casts aside information, or at what point it is safe to move on, discard something and move on. So I have the case that I was in a test, and how good you are. I brought in some circuits, and at that stage the circuits are all blown, but this one will do this, that one does that, it's all blown. Now, the issue there is a more subtle issue. So the person testing these thought, didn't even report this, put this aside, and thought, given what I know about people in general, and the fraction of the population who can successfully build new generation circuits, it is very unlikely that this is here, and it is therefore very unlikely to be so. And so I will discard it. Now, of course, then that gets discounted. Then in future, when my circuits actually do work, and it's now developed to something that can see, so I'm obviously not operating on that method. I'm operating on, I think I might be able to do something. And just let's see, there's nothing to lose. There, I can't really reintroduce it because they have applied their version of the uniformity principle to discard it. Now, the problem is that then it then goes to their uniform principle. This is a typical person, and I can apply all these typical things to them. That is now saying, well, that it's fairly complicated. It says the actual you have the probability that your reasoning is correct. There's you write down across sufficient a series of approximations. That series of approximations has a probability that that is correct. That it doesn't require, and if it's wrong, it then says that when actually the data comes in, you can then go through your probabilistic reasoning and say, oh, well, this is not true, and therefore it has a scatter effect. So they're sort of doing a uniformity principle in terms of their assessment of the world in general and their assessment of their own tests, which by way gets a route in saying that, well, if this is unsafe, that's unsafe, this, you can actually do sort of an architecture and identify, you know, what is suspect in it. So in essence, we have this problem that people are not living in a scientific method. They're not living with Bayesian theory, and they become teachers, and they teach people hypothesis is not, and it's this binary thing this test is 100% positive. It's 100% evidence. It cannot be. It's right. It's either done properly or it's not. We can either. It's either valid or it's invalid. So there's none of this grey area. And so you get, and there's not something of doing a test, doing a series of investigative tests with different theories of different probabilities, you know, the probabilities existing within the probabilities, so that you can do a test and actually be able to get information, form your theories of probability going forward. So I don't know, it's really hard to describe the way that we teach science in this, basically take a religious page out of the 1700s and say, right, we're going to apply sort of Locke and Hume to this, and none of this probability analysis, and I make a hypothesis, and I actually link the evidence and hypothesis together as a unit. Therefore, you know, it means that so much reasoning can't be done. And then to then look at that test, the evidence, and look at the different levels, the numerical significance, the actual numbers of false positives that you could get, or the quality of it, or the evidential significance of it. The probability that I have done, how probable it is that I have, that the set of structure is correct. Now, the way at the moment they have it is that you make a vital error and it's cross. No, there's actually whole shades of grey there, that I select this, it's low cost, it has an error, and at this stage I think it's right. So there's all these subtleties here. And then social significance or moral significance of it, the test, given what you're doing, to go ahead. So transferred into medicine, that does my test induce conditions, you know, in complex systems? Does the system adapt? And now I'm measuring the system's adaption to it. So we'll go for that, and I'll have to go off and read a bit more about it. So Thomas Bayes was a parson, or a reverend in England, and virtually unknown. There's no pictures of him, and he wrote two papers, and one posthumously. The posthumous one is where the probability got ahead, and the first one was on basically miracles, and the next one was on probability. And basically, a miracle is something which is improbable, and just looking at whether it can go forward. So hopefully this is a worthwhile podcast. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.